Hi, this is Treya Lavery with Search Data Management, and I'm here today with Jack Vaughn to talk about the 2017 Spark Summit in Boston, which was earlier this month. We barely made it there because of a major snowstorm, but there is a lot going on. So, Jack, what were your big takeaways from this year's Spark Summit?
Well, it certainly, thank you, Treya. I appreciate it. It did prove that people from Silicon Valley were able to plow through the snow, because we did have a heck of a storm, as you say. There seemed to be very good enthusiasm. There seemed to be just continued use of Spark as an analytical engine, and also covering a lot of the bases involved in processing of data today. And well, we've seen that in the past, but it was seemed to be evolutionary and some sort of incremental movements forward.
You wrote a piece following the conference about how Spark streaming is evolving, and especially how the upcoming Drizzle framework is going to reduce latency in Spark. So what does that mean for the future of Spark and just in general data processing technology?
Well, a year ago, the Spark crew rolled out Spark data frames as a new way to deal with streaming, one that allowed both batch and streaming programming to help happen in the same quote unquote frame. So that was a year ago, and in the meantime, there's a continual interest in an alternative streaming framework known as Flink. It too is an Apache project, and while it does not have the visibility, and it doesn't seem to reach in numbers of Spark, the folks that have used it, many of them are quite vociferous in their advocacy, and one of the issues has been the data latency that Spark shows really negatively versus Flink. So lo and behold, the Spark came originally out of AMP Labs, a Berkeley think tank. And it came from an era of about 5 years ago where the effort was to figure out how to program multiple cores to do distributed computing at a fever pitch, and to allow programmers to do that type of programming without knowing all the intricacies of such complex processing. AMP Labs just gave way. They like to roll these things up and roll them down. And the new one, what we have now is Rise Labs. And certainly one of the players there is John Stokia, who is one of the founders of Databricks, the Spark originator. And one of the efforts he's making is Drizzle, which is looking to cut the latency in streaming. So I had a very interesting session that I managed to be at, and it was led by Ishira Arora, who is a senior data engineer at Netflix. Of course, Netflix is one of the hotbeds for the modern big data processing. And some takeaways. She's moving from batch, helping the company move from batch to streaming as much as they can to real time. And what they're trying to do is what they've been doing, which is to give people suggestions about films, movies, TV shows they might like, and tell people about what's trending in their different categories. And she puts it pretty simply, it's from a modern website, big website point of view. If I wait 24 hours when you can pick up the new information in an hour, yet she goes on to say that, it is a a different animal. When you go to streaming processing from batch processing, and she is using Spark, she and others, it's pretty clear there's a lot of performance tuning that has to be done from Spark streaming. And it's something, it does seem at this point you have to learn. Certainly over events like this give people the opportunity to share information. There's all these knobs and parameters, if you will, in Spark streaming. You have to make a correct choice of the micro batch interval, your use of cluster memory. There's penalties to pay for making mistakes that can't be cured by just simply adding CPUs. So she pointed out that you have to keep the systems running at all times, that when you are doing streaming and it does shut down, it can be a bigger issue than it is with simply restarting a batch. And that as a result, you have to put in checks and balances for monitoring alerts. And my takeaway was this is still something that developers are hand-tuning, custom-building. Yeah, Trey, I was wondering if you could share some of your takeaways on the Spark Summit and machine learning.
So something that I know we talked about a lot when we were at the conference, and what I've at least focused on a little bit looking back on the conference has been the focus on machine learning. And one of the keynotes that we went to that I thought was interesting was from Mike Gualtieri of Forrester. And he talked about how machine learning and AI can provide really great opportunities for a wide variety of businesses by letting them provide a really personalized customer experience. And that's something that it seems like Netflix is using a lot to show, like, the movies that are trending now, but also suggestions for you that come up when you open up your Netflix account. But he was talking about how a lot of companies are not actually adopting machine learning technology just because they are having trouble moving. Do you think that Spark in its current iteration will be able to help organizations move in that direction? And do you think that once Drizzle becomes a bigger part of Spark, do you think that that will help as well?
Well, in the first case, I think that Spark seems to be emerging as a unified programming paradigm for a bunch of big data problems. So as some of the people that you and I talked with said, machine learning is important, but it exists in the context of a whole data flow, a whole process. And what Spark seems to do is handle quite a few parts of that, including ETL, which is sometimes considered old school and boring, but it is a part of machine learning, too. ETL seems to be working well in Spark, at least from the people we spoke with. And Spark provides notebooks for developers to work with machine learning using Python and as well as R and finally, I believe, the Scala language. So from that point of view, it kind of provides a platform for a general opportunity to get going with machine learning. It's probably likely that just as we talked about tuning in Spark streaming, there's tuning of the libraries that needs to happen. So ones that come as open source with Apache Spark, your mileage may vary.
Something that I thought was interesting was in one of the keynotes, I think it was in Mike Gualtieri's keynote, he was talking about a company that analyzes conversations at car dealerships to be able to find out whether it's likely that a customer is going to buy the car. And I talked to someone from McKesson Healthcare that used it for revenue cycles, and we talked to Alfred Essa from McGraw-Hill, who was talking about digital textbooks and how the textbook is able to show students that these are the parts that you need to be paying attention to because this is what's important based on what other students have found important in the past. And so it is a very broad category of use cases, and I think that Gualtieri was saying in his businesses should be taking that opportunity to use that because it can provide that really great customer experience that is so important for creating a relationship with a customer.
I remember when we spoke with Alfred Essa, he said that, you know, while they're highlighting the important parts of books for the students to read, you know, the model of trying to figure out who's going to succeed and try to get ahead and figure out what they need to succeed among students. This is at a high level of scalability now because the online learning spans the universe, and it's not the days where, you know, like my high school where there were 400 kids in the class, you know.
All right. Well, thank you, Jack, and thanks to our listeners for joining us today on this episode of the Talking Data podcast.